Good morning, everybody. Oh, good morning. Daniel chapter 6, we're continuing our study in the Bible in the prophet Daniel. We've gotten through the first five chapters. Thank you, Tim, for praying. How important is prayer to you? Is praying a big part of your life? Is it important to you? Would you rather pray than do other things? What if I said tomorrow you couldn't pray? You could not pray. And if you did, you would be given the death penalty tomorrow. Right here in Yakima, if you prayed to the one true living God tomorrow, anytime tomorrow, from sunup to sundown, you would die. Would you pray tomorrow? Now, you know the right answer because a lot of you know what Daniel 6 is about, but would you really? Would you really? Is prayer more important than your life? Just spending another moment with God, would that be more important than living out the rest of your life here in Yakima, Washington? Well, we're going to see a guy that was confronted with a similar situation to that. He was confronted and he had to make a decision. And we're going to see the decision and the miracle and the amazing things that followed here in the book of Daniel. Many of you, this is probably one of the most common stories in the Bible that many people know that don't even know the Bible. Daniel in the lion's den, Daniel chapter 6. And for good reason, it's a powerful, man, a powerful passage. And Daniel is such a good example to us here in what we're about to see. And hopefully we can apply a lot of these things to our lives. But as we go through it, remember, maybe try to look at it through the eyes of maybe a younger child, or maybe when you first heard this story and you didn't know what was going to happen. And remember Daniel, through the whole thing, he really didn't know what was going to happen. But there's one thing he did know, that God is in charge. God is the king that's in charge. He's the one true king, and his kingdom will last forever. And as long as you're a part of his kingdom, you don't have to really fear other kings or other edicts or things like that. Let's get right to it. Daniel chapter 6, verse 1. Verse 1. Ah, that always works. All right. Daniel 6, verse 1. Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and... It seemed good to King Darius to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, that they would be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. So there's the setting. We've already seen in the first five chapters, there were some young men brought from Judah to Babylon and taught in the Babylonian ways. Daniel and some others set themselves apart. They were 10 times better than all the other wise men. So right from the beginning, it was clear that there was something special with them. Eventually, Daniel would interpret a dream for Nebuchadnezzar, and that would really set him apart from others, and Nebuchadnezzar would have quite a proclamation after that. We read about a fiery furnace where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the guys who worshiped the Lord and refused to worship the other gods of the Babylonians, they refused that, and that gave them the death penalty. And they went in, and through a miracle, God was with them in the furnace, and they came out alive. And maybe that story spread also to other people, maybe even known by Darius here. We saw Nebuchadnezzar humbled, and he himself explained how it happened, an amazing chapter there. And last week, we saw the writing on the wall. the end of the Babylonian Empire, and now we're in the Medo-Persian Empire. Daniel has seen a lot of things happen, hasn't he? He was taken from Judah to Babylon, taught in their ways, saw that come and go, and now it's part of a new empire. And actually, this, where we pick up here in verse 1, is probably around 65 years after he was appointed to the highest position that Nebuchadnezzar appointed him to. So that's 65 years later here. So a lot of time in Medo-Persia here, and a lot of things had happened. You know, when we think of Daniel, I think of him as a great, awesome prophet who is a great example to us, and he is in many different ways. Funny thing is, we don't know much about his life, exactly what he did for most of his life. We know in the early part of his life, we know a little snippet here and there. And here, he is probably, if we add up all the numbers, he's in his late 80s, probably around 90 years old. So that picture of him in the lion's den, make sure it's someone, you know, around 90 years old. I thought about maybe having some people stand up here, they're in their late 80s, and you could look at them and think about what that's like, but that probably wouldn't be good. Might be rude, so I won't do that. But something to think about later on in life. And we don't know much about his life, exactly what he did. Were there other wild miracle things going on? Or maybe nothing. Maybe he just lived a faithful life for many, many years. And eventually, the things that we read about here came to be. Either way, he's a great example. And here we find him in the Medo-Persian Empire under King Darius, who's going to appoint some people over the kingdom, probably to get taxes from them and to keep the peace and just make sure law and order is going on. And over them, he's going to have three commissioners. Those would be the people over the satraps, making sure they're being honest and they're keeping the peace and they're doing the taxes correctly. And so these three people would have to be very special people that the king would trust completely, because there's so much room for people to be, you know, taking bribes and wrong taxes and doing all sorts of things. These would have to be your very best people that would be the most trustworthy. Daniel, one of them. And then it says Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit. And the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. What a position this young guy from Judah, who was an exile from there, and now planning to put him over, it sounds like second in charge of the whole kingdom. Now, we don't have time to get into it, but a lot of commentaries and stuff point out that Darius, there is some discrepancy or argument about who exactly is this guy. Does he have another name? Is he also Cyrus the Persian? Is he also someone else? And honestly, I'm not so sure. I just know he is the guy here. He is, whether he's the king or a king, he is a very powerful king in the Medo-Persian Empire. And this is going on here. All right, and so Daniel would be about to take the position of, this would be second in charge of the kingdom. Wow, just for an exile from Judah. And how did he do that? How did he set him apart? Did he go to the king and say, I'm awesome. I am awesome. Did he get a gathering and say, everyone, I want you to say I'm awesome on three. One, two, three. And, you know, say that to the king? No. He was a humble guy. He did his job well. And amidst that, he was a godly guy as well. Just an amazing example in a pagan society of a godly person and the impact that they can have. All right, verse 4. Then the commissioners and satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs, but they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. Then these men said, we will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regards to the law of his God. Well, there's a lot of good things you could say about a person, but I'd say those are some of the best things you could say about a human being. They looked into his government affairs, and this could be, you know, for a long time here, and they saw that there was no evidence of anything that they could bring against him. Not even anything. He didn't even steal a pencil from the office, or he didn't do this or that. He did nothing. Just amazing. What if someone looked into your background? Where you work, or your government affairs, or the things that you've done in the last 10, 20, 30 years. Could they find anything against you to bring against you? That's a good question. Studying this passage hasn't been a lot of fun. Because I've had to examine my own self and thought, oh man, maybe there are some points where someone could, if they really were looking. Well, with Daniel, there was nothing. There was nothing they could bring against him. What a great guy. That's a hero right there. If you want to be like someone, be like Daniel. And be set apart, above reproach. No one could bring anything against him in his government affairs. And that's an amazing thing. He worked in politics. He was a government person and a godly person in a pagan society. And it's hard to see that all come together in one person. That's a really great thing. And they couldn't find anything against him. And as if that's not good enough to say about a person, the next thing that they say is even better. We're not going to find any ground of accusation against him. The only thing that he always does is he just loves God. He prays all the time. And he's praying to him every day, three times a day. We know it. It's something that sets him apart from other people. He loves his God. He serves his God continually. That'll be mentioned here also. He serves God, he loves God, and he prays every day. That's the only thing we can find against him. Now, is that a bad thing? Obviously not. That's a great thing. But they're like, man, if we're going to take this guy down, and for some reason they want to take him down, that's the only way we can find it. Boy, would you like someone to say that about you? Wouldn't that be great if someone said, man, I can't find anything against you. The only thing against you is that you love God so much. And you're so committed to serving him and praying every single day. I don't think there's anything that could separate you from your God. And that's just so terrible. I can't believe it. And that's the only thing. Only thing they could find against him. So the people around him, they knew it. Daniel was a great witness about God. And the king, we're going to find out, understood about Daniel's God. These people knew about Daniel's God, and surely many other people that he brushed shoulders with every day knew about Daniel's God and how great he was and how Daniel served him faithfully. So in the life of Daniel, we do see a person that served God faithfully, and other people saw it, and there was an impact on them. And maybe for many, many years, he didn't have a big position or miracles happening, just his faithful witness every day. But eventually that had an impact. That's a good thing to think about. Maybe you have a job where you're wondering, is there any fruit coming from my life? Is there any way I can be a witness for God? Well, sometimes just being faithful and working faithfully above reproach every day, day in and day out, maybe there's people watching. And maybe there's people who that will have an effect on. Verse 6. Then these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows. King Darius, live forever. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document, that is, the injunction. So some of his leaders come. Now, they say it's everybody. They say all the commissioners of the kingdom, all the prefects, all the satraps, all the high officials, and the governors all agree on this. Now, is that true? Now, we know there's at least one person that does not agree, so they are lying here. Probably it's a much bigger lie than that. Could they really get all the 120 satraps together and all the other people listed here? Highly unlikely that all of them agreed on this, but that's what they said. And they were putting pressure on the king. They were saying, all your officials, all your people, king, say you should do this. They're trying to put pressure on him to do this. And they say that everyone should pray to him and him alone and no other god for 30 days. So Darius gets to be God for 30 days here in his mind. They're appealing to his ego and his pride. Wouldn't it be nice if people prayed to you? Now, to us, this probably sounds really strange. This is weird. In their society, this would not be strange. They believed in lots of different gods. A king being like a god is no new thing to them. And sometimes, actually, I was reading that this is one way that they would see who was loyal to the king and who wasn't. They would just say for a certain time, you have to pray to the king. And anyone who wouldn't, they would deal with them appropriately. So this is not uncommon. This would not be really odd to them, as odd as it probably sounds to us that this would happen. So they lie about this. They get the king to go along with it. And once he signs it, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, it may not be revoked. So in their empire, the law, there was a really powerful law, very different than Babylon before them. The law was actually over the king, which is amazing. Now, remember back in Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, forget it. What the king said, he could do whatever he wanted. And you had to follow that. If he said throw someone in a fiery furnace because he didn't like their god, you did it. And if 5 or 10 minutes later he said pull them out and everyone has to worship their god, you do that too. The king could change his mind all the time. Now in Medo-Persia, that's not the case. The king cannot. Once he signs something, it's an official law and it cannot be changed even if he wants to. Very different situation here. So the king signs it. And now we'll see what happens next. Verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. And then we're going to read what happens next. Now what was the document? It said anyone who prayed to anyone other than King Darius for 30 days would be thrown into a lion's den. They had a lion's den there for executing people. They probably used it often. Many people went in. How many of those people you think came out of the lion's den? Like if they threw 3 in, how many came out? None. If they threw 5 in, how many came out? None. 1 person in, how many out? When you go in a lion's den, you know, who's going to win? A lion and a person. Well, we're not a betting people, but if you had to bet, who would you bet on, the lions or the people? The lion's going to win every time, okay? Now, we know, I've heard this story from a kid. I know what happens, and most of you know what happens. But you got to remember, that's a complete miracle what's about to happen. When a person goes in a lion's den, they die 100% of the time. There is nothing else that happens. They die. Maybe how long it takes and whatever could vary, but they die. Daniel knew that if he prayed to God, at least in a public way where they saw it, he would die. Okay, this isn't that he would go and have a miracle happen, which we know is about to happen, but he would die. He would go to the lion's den and die. So that's his choice. What's he going to do? What would go through his mind here? Should he pray? Should he not pray? How should he pray? What should he do? Lots of questions there, right? You know, his life's on the line, probably going to think about it a little bit. Something to think about. What would you do in that situation? I think I already asked that. Good question to ask. What would you do? In his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. He continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day. Praying and giving thanks before his God as he had been doing previously. That's what he did. That's his response. An amazing response here, what he does. His life's on the line, and what does he do? He prays. Last week, Dave had a great list for us of things, you know, we should respect the government. The Bible's clear on that, and he talked about that. The only times we don't is when they specifically go against what the Bible says. Obviously, praying to Darius would be wrong. The Bible would say not to do that. So obviously, Daniel cannot do that based clearly on the Bible. But what does the Bible say what he should do, though? Besides not praying to Darius, that's clear. Did the Bible say he had to go in front of an open window? I didn't think it was there, but I'm really glad I listened to a message by John Piper, and he said he did look, and he couldn't find anywhere that the Bible said you have to do that. Now, some people did in the Bible do that, but you don't have to. The Bible didn't say he had to do that. Could he have closed the shutters on the window? Maybe a little sheet over it, let a little light in? Maybe not pray so loud so it's not clear. Maybe not on your knees so they don't know that you're actually praying. I mean, wouldn't it have been better if he just kind of, you know, prayed but not so clearly so that he was really praying? And then he wouldn't get in trouble, right? Maybe many things went through his head. I don't know. I suspect probably not a lot of those things went through his head. He loved God and he prayed. And there was nothing that was going to change that. Darius had a lot of power. Yes, he could throw him to the lion's den. But who was really in charge here? I think Daniel knew 100%. He was totally convinced. And a whole life of faithfulness showed him that he knew who was in charge. It was not Darius. It was not the satraps and people trying to get him in charge. It was not the lions in the lion's den who seemed to be in charge down there in that pit. No, it was God. God's in charge in the kingdom. God's in charge in these other people's lives. God's in charge in the lion's den. God was in charge. And so he did what he always did. He kneeled on his knees in front of an open window in a way that was clear to everyone that he was praying. Not for a show. He wasn't doing it to be showy, but it's because he loved his God and he loved to pray. And no one was going to take that away from him. He prayed. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den? The king replied, "The statement is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked." Then they answered and spoke before the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, he pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you sign, but keeps making his petition 3 times a day. Wow. So they remind him of the injunction, and they point out, and of course they were probably happy to point it out, because their whole goal was to trap Daniel and here to actually have him killed. What did they say to him? They said, "Daniel, who's one of the exiles." That was his title in their case. Daniel, one of the exiles from Judah. Remember, king, he's not one of us. He's one of those guys from Judah, not one of us. What's another title they could have said? They could have said one of the 3 commissioners over the whole kingdom. That might have been better. Or Daniel, the one that you're about to appoint to second in charge of the whole kingdom. They could have said that too. They didn't say that, did they? They were reminding the king that he's not one of us. He's an exile from Judah. It says he pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction. That's a lie. He did pay attention to the king. In fact, we're going to find he had a close relationship with the king, and the king really liked Daniel. Daniel, again, was a great guy, and when he prayed, it was not out of a spirit of rebellion. It was not out of a spirit of, "I hate the king and I'm going to do this and you just try to tell me not to pray. I'm going to do it anyway." It wasn't anything like that. He had respect for the king because God told him to have respect for the king, and he did. And we know that he had a lot because the king really liked him and was going to appoint him second over the whole empire. So no, this wasn't a disrespect thing. This wasn't Daniel ignoring the king or the injunction. But it was it's a case of Daniel knowing who's really in charge. The true king is God. And if God says something and this king says to go against that, well, I have to go with God on this. So a lot of what they're saying here, some of it is a lie, but they say he keeps making his petition three times a day, and that is true. He continues to pray three times a day. Even though it might cost him his life, he continued to do that. It said when he prayed, he was praying and he was giving thanks before his God. I wonder what his prayer was that day. Maybe when he talked to God, he said, all right, God, next time I talk to you, I'm going to be face to face. He was going to die. He knew that they were waiting for him. He's a very smart guy, ahead of all this politics. He knew all of what was going on for sure. And he knew he was going to be in the lion's den, lived a good life maybe. And he said, God, I'm excited. I'm going to be with you soon. Maybe he said something like that. It said he was giving thanks. Thank you, God, that I'm about to be thrown in the lion's den. He loved God, didn't he? He knew God was in charge, and there was a much bigger thing going on here. Verse 14. Then as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed. Daniel, Darius really liked Daniel. I might say he loved the guy. He thought he was wonderful, not just as a leader, but as a friend. He would do anything to save him right now. And he was wishing that he could. It's amazing, really, the law of the Medes and Persians, that a king cannot revoke what he said. He couldn't even come up with something else. Seems like he could have come up with some other law that would kind of negate the first one. I don't know, but he couldn't. There was just no way out of it. And of course, the other guys come in and say, remember the law of the Medes and Persians. You can't change your mind on this. So they're there right to remind him. The king cared a lot about Daniel. Did Daniel's life... Coming up. There we go. Did Daniel have a big effect on the kingdom? Yes, he did. Was it because he put himself out there and declared how great he was? It was his faithful service to God, his faithful prayer every day. Man, that had a huge effect. The king of an empire here is distressed because Daniel's going to the lion's den. He really cared about him. Verse 16. Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. Now this is amazing. This is Medo-Persia. This is a Gentile empire, pagan people who believe in gods, very, very far from any belief in God that we believe in or anything like that. These are, you know, the wild people. And the king of this empire, what does he say to Daniel? Your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. Wow. Again, I want to point out, every time Darius put a person in the lion's den, how many times did they come out? Never. It never happens. Again, we know what's going to happen in the story. Most of you know, but he didn't. And I would say also that Daniel probably didn't. We don't read of anything here where God told him what was going to happen. He knew God could save him, but he didn't know if he would or not. And the king himself says, May God save you. God will deliver you. You know, in a way, the king might be saying, you know, Daniel, I tried to save you and I couldn't. But your God can do more than I can. He's admitting it. He's admitting that Daniel's God is powerful. And he says that to him as he casts him in. Verse 17, a stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring, with the signet rings of his nobles, so that nothing would be changed in regard to Daniel. Then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. He really cared about Daniel. He did not want to throw him in the den. It's amazing how the effect Daniel had on a king, that he liked him so much. He couldn't sleep, couldn't eat, nothing. And it was very different. And people would see this. People would say, why is the king so troubled? And, well, because he cares about Daniel. And he didn't want to throw him in the lion's den. Verse 19, then the king arose at dawn at the break of day and went in haste to the lion's den. When he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions? Wow, what a moment in time. Are you picturing the situation? I don't know exactly what the lion pit looked like, but it probably was they were probably up high looking down into it of some way of that going on. And he would come, probably still too dark to see in there. If Daniel was alive, so he just has to call out in a troubled voice, Daniel, is there any way? Did your God, who you always serve? Again, did Daniel have an effect on people? The king knew he always served him. Daniel, the God you always served, was he able to save you? I wonder if Daniel waited a moment before he answered. King, can we talk about this later? I don't want to wake the lions up. Can you get me out of here and we can discuss it then? No, I see a lot of similarities to what happens here as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. They weren't looking for an exit. They were in there with the Lord, and they were fine to be there. They didn't come out till the king asked them to come out. Daniel, apparently he was fine, and he gives a little speech from the lion's den. I don't know if I would want to talk loud right then, you know. He gives his speech. Verse 21. Daniel spoke to the king, O king, live forever. Do you think those were powerful words in Darius's life? O king, live forever. Wow. Just those words alone, he could have stopped right there. And that would have been a powerful, powerful thing. O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouths, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him, and also toward you, O king. I have committed no crime. Wow, so God sent an angel and shut the lion's mouth. You know, I wish I had more information on what happened in the lion's den. We know about Darius and what he did that night. Honestly, I'm not too worried about Darius. It's Daniel that I'm worried about. And we're not told a lot. We're just told that an angel shut the lion's mouth. God was with him. Whether that angel was God himself or he sent the angel, either way, I would say God was with Daniel. Daniel was close to God. God was close to Daniel. He was right there with him. And God was in charge in the lion's pit. Verse 23, then the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. It was a miracle, a complete miracle. The lions were not old, decrepit, arthritic lions that were not hungry. They hadn't lost their teeth and were too tired to eat him. No, we're going to find out in the next verses that's not true. It was a miracle, a complete miracle that God saved him in the lion's den. Verse 24, then the king then gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them their children and their wives into the lion's den, and they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. That proves that the lions were killers, trained to do exactly what they're supposed to, and that's what they did. According to the law of the Medes and Persians, if someone was guilty of a crime like this, they and their family would be thrown in with them. So, kind of a sad thing here, but do you see that they were trying to use, the bad guys were trying to use the law of the Medes and Persians to punish Daniel? In the end, it was the law of the Medes and Persians that actually killed them and their family. The very law that they were trying to use against someone else. And they got the consequences of that. Verse 25. Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language who were living in all the land. This is the third time in Daniel that we've seen a proclamation by a pagan king that's a pretty good one about God. Just amazing here in the book of Daniel, the things that happen. So here we go. This is a good proclamation. He says, may your peace abound. I make a decree. Now remember, it's the law of the Medes and Persians. When you make a decree, can it be changed? No, it can't. So listen to this decree. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. He is the living God and enduring forever. His kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. What a proclamation. This was written by a king over an empire, a very, very powerful king, one of the most powerful at the time. And what does he admit about his own kingdom? He's saying that there's a different kingdom, not mine. This God of Daniel has a kingdom, and that's the one. That's the one that will last forever. That's an amazing statement by this guy. I just tend to wonder, Darius, he loved Daniel. He understood things about God here. I think Daniel had a really big effect on him. And I wonder if Darius really believed. I don't know. I don't know more than that, but he says some great things here. He's the living God. The other gods of Medo-Persia, the Babylonians, dead. This is the true living God. His kingdom will not be destroyed. If you take his people and throw them to the lions and they don't die, you can't destroy that kingdom. You can do everything you can and you can't do it. It's his kingdom that's more powerful than mine. That's what he's saying. His dominion will be forever. He delivers, he rescues, he performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. What a great thing. You know, that's not something that he got from the story here. I think Daniel talked to him about God, and I think he knew a lot about God from Daniel. And he delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. That proclamation would go out to many people, and who knows what fruit came from all of that, from this story. The life of a guy about 90 years old who lived a faithful life. And what was it about his life that really made such an impact? He prayed three times a day. He loved his God and he was committed to serving him, to being above reproach. Living what you might call a quiet life, and a decree about him went out to the whole empire. Wow, he had a huge effect. Could God use you to have an effect on the people around you? Be like Daniel, and yes, he could. Maybe you're a bit like me when I've tried to examine my life and studying this, and I found I'm not so much like Daniel. Well, maybe admit that you're not to God, and if you've sinned, admit it and ask forgiveness. And if you need to go out to other people, ask them forgiveness too. That could have a big impact too. That could be a good witness for God as well. Admitting that you're wrong, he's right, and asking forgiveness and making it right. Who knows? That might just have a big effect on people as well. I had three quick points and I just put them away. A lot of things we can learn from this story in the life of Daniel. I'm not going to list them all, but here's just a couple of quick things. Be faithful in everyday life. people might be watching and it might have a big effect. God's in charge. Daniel was completely convinced of that, and he acted on it. Do you believe God's truly in charge of everything? If you do, it's going to have a big impact on your life. And here's one I've been thinking a lot, maybe the most important of this entire thing. I have a deep theological statement here to make, and I think you should all do it, and it will completely change your life. If you want to get a pen or pencil and write this down, this is what you should really get from this, everybody. Here we go. Here's what you should do. Are you ready? Pray. There you go. What did Daniel do? What is it that changed the course of things and that had such an impact? He prayed. Just pray. Just go do it. Maybe we should pray right now. Let's pray. God in heaven, we thank you that you're the awesome God, the true living God, and your kingdom will endure forever. Thank you that we can be a part of your kingdom and know that we are. Be a part of your family and be with you forever. Thank you for that great blessing, Lord. And we thank you for the story of Daniel. Help us to be like him. Help us to be faithful in the everyday tasks that we do, and that might have an impact on the people around us, Lord. And we thank you that you're in charge. Thank you that you listen to us and that we can pray to you. Lord, help us to be a people of prayer and to take full advantage of that and to pray to you all the time. Help us maybe to even be known as people that pray to you, the true living God. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.